It's Oscar weekend. Who will win Academy Awards? And what do the films say about Hollywood and American culture today? Most critics and film aficionados agree that there is no real frontrunner in the Best Picture or Best Director categories this year. There aren't even two or three films viewed to have an equal chance. The winner is almost certain to be a surprise. That's not the case for Best Actor or Actress, in which there are clear favorites. Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour and Frances McDormand for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. What do you think? Have you seen any of the movies up for big awards? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Main Calling, join us to talk Oscars, Hollywood Today, the business of the movies, and what it all means for our culture. Main Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Are you planning to watch the Oscars on Sunday? Do you have predictions for the winners? We are going to talk about the movies and other categories up for awards, as well as what is happening generally in the world of film today. Joining me in our studio, Mary Poles. She's a features writer for the Portland Press Herald, who used to be a film critic for Time Magazine and remains a movie buff, to say the least. And Sam Mercer, he's general manager of the Nickelodeon Cinemas in Portland. As always, we want to hear from you. Did any movie make a big impression on you this year? How about any actors or actresses? What are you going to be watching for on Oscar night? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back, Mary, and welcome, Sam, to our studio. It's great to have you here. And I'll start with the big one. Mary, what would you like to see win Best Picture?
Oh, God. You know, I have been binging the movies. I had three more Best Picture nominees that I needed to see before I came on here so that I wouldn't be embarrassed.
I'm so impressed with your dedication.
And so last night I watched Three Billboards, The Shape of Water, and most of Phantom Thread, which I would have finished because I was loving it. And so, you know, I try not to get too vested in what I want to win, and I don't have a clear favorite this year. And I also I can't tell what's going to win. Everybody is saying The Shape of Water will, and I could see why, because it's this sumptuous, total Hollywood, you know, like nods to past cinema. Like there's a Shirley Temple clip in there and things like that. But I don't know. I think it really just depends on the mood of the voters.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely something we've seen at the theater in terms of what ends up winning and what doesn't over year and year, is that it's much less clear cut than people think in terms of what's going to win, because it's kind of all over the place. There seems to be a weird like who is owed an Oscar, what movie should get one versus what one actually is, like, maybe what you think is the best movie of the year.
Okay, so Sam, the year that Boyhood did not win, which I think is a couple years ago now, still mad about that. Were you hearing from people in the theater then?
What won that year? Do you remember?
No.
Was that L.A. Story?
No, that was last year was the big La La Land.
Yeah.
Did Moonlighting win that year?
Oh, yes, Moonlight won that year.
Remember, there was the accident.
Yes, the accident. Right.
It's never, we don't really get outraged so much as sort of like, well, I think that should have won, you know, from the crowd. And that's fine. What is interesting is to see what people are upset about in terms of the nominations, because everybody's always going to be disappointed in what doesn't win when their favorite thing doesn't win, because there's only one winner.
Right.
But now there's like, what, 8 Best Picture nominations?
I'm counting as you talk.
It's 10. It's
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 nominees.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it seems like from my childhood there used to always be 5.
There were.
It made an even little presentation on the screen.
And
so,
they increased it. God, how many years ago? Not too terribly long ago. And
I liked it better when it was 5.
Yeah, to have like what it was supposed to represent, a broader scope, but then it was just, you know, 4 other dramas. You know, and it's like, okay, well.
Sure, and I wonder how that changes the changes things, you know, that if it were just five, is there would the outcomes have been different over the past few years if people had fewer, you know, voters had fewer things to vote on?
Yeah. And you also have to factor in the that they've changed the makeup of the Academy in the last few years to try to get some new
younger.
Thank God. And so because of that, I think a movie like Call Me By Your Name has a better chance. You know, which is this beautiful, lush Italian drama involving a gay love story. I think it probably has a better chance than it did 5 years ago. And
the fact that Get Out even got nominated.
I know.
Because I honestly cannot even think of the last time a horror movie.
Yes.
Got nominated.
Yes.
Like, I mean, letting alone the social implications of that film. The fact is, a horror film is nominated for Best Picture.
So here's what I was going to say is I have not seen as many as you had, Mary, but I think Get Out is the most innovative and interesting.
Absolutely. I think it's the best movie of the year. And I was saying that when it came out and we had it and everybody was like, what's this movie? And I'm like, it's a horror film. And they're like, well, I don't like horror. And I'm like, you have to see this movie.
It's kind
really
of a
important
horror film.
Oh, it absolutely is. It is. It is.
It 100% is. It has all the hallmarks
movie.
Of a
yeah,
horror film.
Yeah, it's some people will call it a thriller or a suspense movie. But I have always held that the difference between a thriller and a suspense movie and a horror film is the element of the fantastic. And that's very strong in Get Out. I mean, it is grounded in reality, and like the social commentary in that movie is incredibly real and incredibly poignant. But it is, you know, it is a horror film, and as somebody who loves movies, and specifically loves horror films, it's really cool to see like that acknowledgement from kind of the big kids table of cinema.
I know. It is really, it's great. Yeah. I mean, I think it's not a particularly innovative movie in terms of filmmaking, but culturally, I think it is huge. And to me, I mean, what I'm talking about is the way it looks, the way it's scripted, you know, it didn't break any walls for me. Except for this monumental, you know, like we joke in horror films, right? That like the black guy always gets killed first,
right?
And to enter it from this different dimension is just it's really awesome,
right? Well, and I'm wondering, what do you think Oscars reward? Because are they rewarding the movie that is the most innovative, that says something that hasn't been said quite like that before? You know, I think about I last night streamed Lady Bird, and although I loved it and I thought it was a beautiful film, I know it's not going to stick with me like Get Out stuck with me. It's been sticking with
me. Well, but see, that's the thing, is that there's certain movies that are always going to stick with different people differently. For instance, a friend of mine who runs a great my friend Mackenzie, who runs a great podcast called We the Academy. It's just film critique. But she was talking to me about how Lady Bird was maybe the most important film of the year for her, because it is something that is going to stick with her for the rest of her life, maybe, because it was a coming of age story about a mother and daughter, and it was presented in such a way that she hadn't seen before, and that was so important to her and her life. And that's one of the really cool things about movies, is that even when we get films that we can watch and go, you know, this doesn't really speak to me on any level, we can still appreciate how good it is.
Right.
But we can know that there are brilliant films out there that while we may not like them, speak like incredibly important layers to other people out there.
Mary, it's interesting that you said that there was that The Shape of Water seems to be the favorite, if there is a favorite. I've spent my morning reading all these articles, and I don't think there's a favorite among, you know, what's being written about in the newspapers around the country, at least Variety, The Washington Post, New York Times. Critics seemed, and what I think is interesting, I want your take on this, Mary, is there seems to be this trend of critics saying, for every category, here's what will win and this is what should win.
Yes, I used to have to do that feature every year.
Really?
And I actually enjoyed it back then, but I really wouldn't want to do it now. I mean, I think like take the example of Boyhood, which I'm still sad it didn't win, but or last year, Moonlight, which I saw at the Nickelodeon and was just in raptures over and felt like it was something I'd never seen a movie quite like that before. And my expectation, if I had been writing the should win, will win story, I wouldn't have thought that could possibly win. I do feel like things have changed.
Oh, I think they are changing.
Yeah,
because I think we are in that period of changing where, like, we're going to see some right choices get made, and we are going to also see some incredibly wrong choices get made.
I hope Three Billboards does not win.
I don't know, honestly. I really like Frances McDormand.
She's amazing.
I like everybody in that cast. It's very obvious that was a film made about the Ozarks by a British guy, though. So it's kind of like that's... This isn't really how people talk over there.
The violence just got so cartoonish that point where she blows up the police station. Sorry, spoilers are okay.
I haven't seen it.
It's sort of one of those things where it's like there are, for me, there is that director tends to do that in his movies.
People loved In Bruges, but I did not.
Oh, yeah, Seven Psychopaths, which I think is still one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, we're such a different demographic. That's great. I'm so glad.
Let me throw this out there, you guys. The Post, neither of you mentioned that. I'm guessing 10 years ago, The Post would have been a favorite.
I took my kid to The Post. Yeah. I've worked at newspapers, as you know, my whole career, and I found it a wonderful, moving, a classic Best Picture kind of movie. It made me cry. My kid liked it, even though he's 13, and I feel like that one could go the distance, but I don't think it will this year. But then, and that said, I think that Dunkirk is also a classic,
right.
Big
Post
kind of.
And Dunkirk, mm-hmm. Both what you say, classic.
Yes.
Best Pictures.
And The Darkest Hour is almost like a parody of that.
Get at least one of those every year.
Yeah. And Gary Oldman is great in it. It's very interesting if you pair Dunkirk and The Darkest Hour or Darkest Hour, to do a doubleheader of those, because it's really like different pieces and parts of the same event.
Yep.
And one is so... One is so classic Hollywood, let me like feed you everything and including a obvious best actor kind of performance. Whereas Dunkirk, did we know any of their names? Did we really know any of their backstories? It was just a really different look at war.
Yeah. A lot of people really like Dunkirk. I recognize that it is a great movie. I recognize that it is also a movie that I will probably not watch more than one other time. Didn't really speak to me that much. But it is really well made. And as much of a hang up as I have about some of the stuff in that movie, it is almost all traditional effects in Dunkirk. So when there's like the great ship sinking and everything like that, that's actually dudes in water in like the set that's, meant to be that cramped and everything. And that's really impressive and really hard to do and is not something you see very often anymore. And it was really nice to see it because it looks better with traditional effects. And
yeah, it's a beautifully made movie.
The Post, as for The Post, it's same thing with The Darkest Hour. They're great movies. Like, it's so weird talking about Best Picture nominations for me because people are like, well, which one's the best? And it's like, I mean, it really depends what you're looking for, because you're not gonna, you can see any of these and you're gonna enjoy them. Like,
you're giving
all
like the
good.
Waitress steak and fish answer here, and I'm with you on that.
Because it's like,
what are you in the mood for?
What do you want? Do you want a drama? Do you want something that's a little bit more lighthearted? Do you want something that's more serious? Do you want something that's going to make you think? Do you want something that's going to make you think and also make you feel a lot? Do you want to feel bad? Do you want to feel good? You know, and it's
I'd rather feel Get Out this year than Shape of Water.
I think Shape of Water has a better chance. Because I think Shape of Water is probably a little bit safer in a lot of ways that Get Out isn't. And I also think that there's a lot of people who still who will recognize that Get Out is important, who will recognize all of the commentary that Get Out has afforded us, we'll also go, but it's a horror movie.
But see, that's why I was wondering about the number of nominees. Is the safe vote divided this year in such a way that perhaps an unsafe winner might make? I want to ask you all just, you know, of the 9 films that are up for Best Picture, and those are also up for, you know, Best Screenplay and Best Director, what does this say? What does this group, this stable of films, say about our culture today? Does it say something? Anything?
I'm always hesitant to pass commentary on culture and mass via an award show. I think that if we were to say that this says anything about the U.S., I will say that it does say that it is changing very slowly. But I think that it is, and I think that there is more attention being put on issues of race and gender and sexuality in ways that haven't been in the past. And I think that those movies are definitely being talked about and seen by more people than they have been.
And I would point out that of the list of 9 Best Picture nominees, I would guess that the President of the United States, were he capable of sitting through a movie, would maybe get through Darkest Hour, and everything else would be something that he would not enjoy.
No comments.
The Hollywood voter, I think, is often making a point when they're filling out their ballots, both for nominations and then for the winners. Yeah. And I think that this year, it's, you know, last year, the Oscars, I think people were sort of still stunned in Hollywood by the fact that Trump won.
The Oscars So White movement.
Yes, absolutely. And so this year we have the impact of a very political year, a very politicized environment. And so I would say that of these, if I had to cross one off the list that will definitely not win, it would be Darkest Hour because of that.
Interesting.
Honestly, I think that if it's weird because there's like 2 layers of politics involved with the Oscars. There's national politics and then there's Hollywood politics.
Yeah.
Because it's who's owed an Oscar, who's hot. Like, I think there's a really good argument to be made that Saoirse Ronan, is that how you say it?
Saoirse Ronan
has a really good shot at winning an Oscar because, like, it's been like 3 big hits now.
3 nominations,
I
know, but I kind of feel like Frances. I think
But that's the thing, is that it's like, it could be either Saoirse or Frances McDormand in the Best Actress, but I think that, you know, clear that, you know, in the Best Actor, it's going to be Gary Oldman. Like,
You think?
It's going to be just like it was Leonardo in The Revenant. Who, again, hot take, didn't like The Revenant that much. I know it was a beautiful movie and it was filmed using only natural light. I know all of the technical stuff about it. I really like the director. I also think that it kind of was not that moving. I just didn't see that much in it. But
Sam, you are here to offer your opinion and we're happy you have. My husband liked The Revenant better than I did, too.
So. A lot of people love The Revenant, and it's something I've always had to clarify, where it's like, this is a brief tangent. I really want to say this. As somebody who runs a movie theater, I see movies, like, all the time. People talk about, what's good, what's not? And it's like, it doesn't matter what is good, because we all see things differently in terms of movies. Like, you have to watch stuff and decide for yourself and enjoy stuff. And if you like something I don't, that's fine. Celebrate that, you know? Like the movies you like.
Okay.
All right.
But can I just, Sam, I would like to make a bet, a little wager with you on the Gary Oldman thing. And because I do like to sort of play odds here, and maybe like you can slip me into a movie at the Nickelodeon for free or something lovely like that. But instead of Gary Oldman, I'm going to say, what about Daniel Kaluuya? Am I saying it right?
Kaluuya
from Get Out, because I feel like oftentimes when there's a movie that people really love and they want to see it rewarded, they go for an actor or a supporting actor. And I could see people saying, Gary Oldman, I'm kind of sick of him. And that movie was, watching it was
you
hard.
Guys, we have to take a break. But we can continue this in just a minute. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Maine Health Cancer Care Network. World-class cancer care right here in the place that gives strength. Home.
Yep, rock. Harise.
That's the late, great Slim Gaylard, a man of many talents, to put it mildly. Along with Gene Ammons, Ella Fitzgerald, the Hatter Call Bouncers, and a lot of others, Slim is just one of the artists we'll be hearing this week on Jazz Tonight. My name is Rich Tozier. I hope you can join me Friday evening at 8 on Maine Public Classical for 2 solid hours of jazz.
High school basketball live coverage on Maine Public Television is underway, running through Sunday. If you're a fan, you'll find the latest schedule for live and then rebroadcast games on our website, mainepublic.org. Just click on the homepage basketball box there. Now, if you're not a fan and you want to know if your favorite programs, such as NewsHour, NewsHour Weekend, Nightly Business Report, High School Quiz Show, or Washington Week are affected, and if they are, when you might be able to see them, please also visit mainepublic.org. Click on television and then schedule. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today in the program, we are talking about movies and the Oscars. With me in the studio, Sam Mercer, who's the general manager for the Nickelodeon Cinemas, and Mary Poles, who's a features writer for the Portland Press Herald and a longtime film critic. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to calls, though, we're going to continue the thread from before the break, which is about the Best Actor nomination. And what I was going to insert, but I didn't have time because we needed to go to a break, is that on your to your point, Sam, about Gary Oldman being a favorite, don't Oscars tend to award people who transform themselves into something else entirely?
Yeah. And the reason why I think it's Oldman's got a really good chance is because sometimes these awards get used kind of like lifetime achievement awards.
Oh, totally.
You know,
Russell Crowe.
Yeah. And Leonardo. And it's just sort of one of those things where it's like Oldman has been Gary Oldman has been doing some amazing work his entire career.
Yeah, but like, so did Paul Newman. Think how long it took. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know,
and I mean, I'm not saying that it's necessarily going to be this year. I'm just saying that it's like they've essentially like teed up the perfect movie to just be like, here's your achievement award. Now we don't have to do this again.
Right. Do you even recognize him? Yeah.
And it's
so much makeup.
It's kind of one of those things where it's like, but I mean, even when Oldman doesn't have makeup on, it's like he's physically able to transform himself into different characters. He's one of the
actor.
Most physically brilliant actors around. As for Get Out winning, I think that Get Out is a lock for Best Original Screenplay.
Yes.
I think it's a lock. But as far as Best Actor goes, if it's not going to be Gary Oldman,
do you think Timothée Chalamet? Is that what you're going to say?
I think Timothy Chalamet has it, because I don't think, because that's the thing, is I think that Get Out is going to get, it's a real contender for Best Picture. I think there is talks to be had for Jordan Peele with Best Director. And I know it's going to be, like,
I think it's going to be Guillermo.
Yeah, I do too. But I think
Guillermo
you could
del
make
Toro,
the case.
Del Toro, Shape of Water, yeah.
I think that it's a lock for Best Screenplay. So when you look at all of the movies in Best Picture, you know they're going to try to honor most of those movies in some way. It's the ones that aren't going to win a Best Original Screenplay, aren't going to win Best Director, aren't going to win Best Picture, they're going to get another big nod. So I think that Call Me By Your Name's big nod is going to be Best Actor.
Okay, so we're going to go to David from Rockport, who wants to join our conversation. Hi, David. Thanks for waiting, and go ahead.
Well, hi, guys. Great show. I have to agree with Mary a little bit about Get Out. I think it was really clever and a very entertaining movie, but 20 years from now, I don't think anyone's going to remember it more than like a really good episode of like a Netflix Dark or Black Mirror. I hope, when you think about the social commentary that Moonlight had, I hope you guys have seen The Florida Project, which I think was highly overlooked in terms of
except for the best supporting actor.
Heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does have him for best supporting, but in terms of innovation, in terms of filmmaking, editing, but also the kind of heart and that performance by Brooklyn Prince is kind of amazing. Would you please comment about that film if you've seen it?
Is Brooklyn Prince the little girl?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's great, although I have to say that I'm not a fan of the sort of like under 10-year-old set getting Oscar nominations for performances, because I think it's, I don't know, there's something about it that kids are wonderfully natural, and you put a camera in front of them and you get the right kid and you get the right screenplay and you get the right atmosphere on set to make them comfortable. Like, think about Beasts of the Southern Wild. Remember Kwanzaa Wallace? If I'm remembering mm-hmm. her name right. I think, didn't she win Best Supporting Actress?
No, she just got nominated.
She was just nominated? Okay. Anyway, I thought that little girl was great. I remember her mother more. And I'm glad William Dafoe, who I think is a wonderful actor, is up for Best Supporting Actor for The Florida Project. I think that it's a case of that movie was just a little too small for the lazy Oscar voter. And there are a lot of lazy Oscar voters. For instance, Jennifer Lawrence, I don't know if you guys heard this in the last few days, but she was on some talk show where they asked her about Phantom Thread, or maybe she offered this up, that she watched, I think she said 90 seconds of it or 3 minutes of it before she decided that she wasn't going to bother. Yeah. And this is a woman who was in that movie Mother that, you know, I have friends who still have PTSD from seeing it.
Man, I got some opinions about that movie. But the Florida Project is Florida Project's a very interesting movie. I actually didn't get to see this movie, and I'm really kind of upset at myself for that, because we had it for a while. But it was one of those films that when we had it at the Nick, it was fairly low attendance. And then it started to garner some steam, and then it dropped off again. And then it went away for a week, and then it came back for another 2 weeks, and then it was gone. And we just would have this constant trickle of people asking about, like, well, where's the Florida Project? And it's like, well, we've had it for about like 5 or 6 weeks total. Like,
but they hadn't caught on.
But they hadn't. But like, yeah, there hadn't been any marketing about it except for later on in it. And there seemed to be a lot of word of mouth buzz, but it wasn't a huge amount. So it was sort of one of those movies that, like, I caught bits and pieces of it. And, you know, William H. Macy is another one of those actors that it's just kind of like, yeah, cast him in anything.
William Dafoe, you mean?
It was William Dafoe?
Yeah,
it was William Dafoe, wasn't it?
Same thing with William H. Macy.
That's the thing, though. It's also William Dafoe.
David, thanks for calling and starting this string of the conversation. I usually don't like to read long emails or long Facebook posts, but I'm going to read this one because it's a bit of a rant and it's kind of entertaining. This is Louise on Facebook. I was so disappointed in some films I was really looking forward to. Shape of Water, ugh. Wanted to love this as it's a favorite genre. But why was Michael Shannon playing the same role he had in Boardwalk Empire as Van Alden? Why the total diminution of Zelda's husband into a passive bystander and a bit overlong? Phantom Thread, total turnoff from the point where he takes off her lipstick. A better looking Weinstein of another era. Yuck. Darkest Hour, much, much better channeling of Winston Churchill, although different time period, by John Lithgow in The Crown. The Post and Lady Bird, strong, accomplished, but Get Out should win it. Great to hear you on the radio, Sam Hunter Mercer. Do you know Louise?
Yeah, I think that's Louise Rosen, isn't it?
Is it Louise Rosen? Yeah, no? Our producer's nodding. Yep.
Yep, I know Louise. She's a friend. It's nice to nice to hear from her. She's somebody who used to work on the Maine Jewish Film Festival, which is coming up.
That's right. This month.
Yeah, this month. You can get more information about it at themjff.org if you are interested.
Excellent.
Thanks, Lori. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling. Lori's in Ellsworth.
Hi. When I turned the radio on, you guys were talking about Three Billboards, and I'm not sure I got it exactly what you said, but it seems somebody had a problem with the violence, perhaps, or the unreality of it. And as a big fan of Martin McDonagh's work, I wanted to stand up for this movie, because all of his work, which is brilliant in my view, combines violence, humor, and deep emotion. And In Bruges was one of my favorite films ever. And I think that Three Billboards needs to be viewed as a fable about revenge. and the consequences of seeking revenge and not as a real story. And so I think maybe that's the problem with the way some people see it. I view it as the great American novel on the big screen. It deals with so many issues that are in American life, racism, sexism, you know, ignorance and violence and all of these things. And I thought it was a wonderful movie. Thank you.
Okay. Are you gone? You're not gone, are you? Oh.
Maybe
she's listening. I hope she's listening because I wanted to ask her how she felt about the ending of that movie, which is, it's sort of an open-ended kind of, you know, you're not completely sure what they're going to do, whether they're going to go commit some more violence.
Yeah.
But I would still argue that I think that the violence in the movie is very well played until a crucial point where Frances McDormand's character does something that I found over the top, which puts Sam Rockwell, also an Oscar nominee for Best Supporting Actor, puts him in a situation that I also considered over the top. And I understand that that's Martin McDonagh's thing.
Yeah.
I can go along with that a lot of times. I mean, I loved Pulp Fiction. But in this particular case, you know, it's kind of like you feel about Michael Shannon in The Shape of Water. When I saw him appear last night, I texted a friend because I was watching it on a screener, and I texted a friend to say, oh, God, not Michael Shannon doing this again. You know, like, does he always have to be that particular jerk?
Yeah, I mean, it's just this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. Movies mean so much to people. And like really powerfully, that, you know, there's always going to be, this is how I see it. You know, this is movies, this director does this stylistically and it really speaks to me powerfully. So I need you to understand that. And it's like, that's great. And I actually completely agree with this opinion in terms of the director here's last name I'm blanking on right now.
McDonagh.
Thank you. I wanted to say a name that I knew was wrong. That's why I was like, this isn't right. But yeah, In Bruges was great. Seven Psychopaths, as I said, is one of my favorite movies. And it's like the violence that he does that he incorporates in the films is stylized and overdone to the point where it's metaphor, which I think you recognize.
That's true. But in defense of not particularly enjoying violence,
yeah,
calling it stylized doesn't somehow make it okay for me.
No, and
it doesn't make me
say,
oh my
yeah.
goodness, well, how did I not notice the artfulness of this violence?
Exactly, and that's exactly what I was about to say, which is that, like, but for some people, even stylizing violence is like, it's still violence. Like, there's certain things in movies where, like, you can stylize you can do, like, a period piece, for example, and you can stylize all of the costuming and everything to look more like a twist of modern as well as past. I the Anna Karenina movie that came out.
Oh,
that
was insufferable. Yes.
Right. But it was super stylized.
Yes.
And some friends who really love period pieces still really loved it. I don't like period pieces. So it didn't matter how stylized it was to me. So I think that there is something.
Wait, how about I, Tonya? There's a period piece from, you know, from probably your youth.
I have not seen any of I, Tonya.
Okay, we have an email from Tom. How come no one's talking about Phantom Thread and Daniel Day-Lewis? You talked about it a little bit, Mary. Louise Rosen's Facebook post talked about it.
I would like to talk about it. I haven't seen it. I have made several jokes to customers who have asked me why I haven't seen it. And my joke is this. It's Paul Thomas Anderson directing Daniel Day-Lewis. It's going to be technically brilliant. I don't need to see it to tell you that. It's one of those movies where I would really like to see it. I will probably wait for this one to come out on DVD.
But I'm just going to interrupt because I've seen three quarters of it, and I would actually really, if I didn't have to work this afternoon, I would go home and finish it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
He's wonderful. Talk about stylized. I mean, it's a really beautiful, beautiful movie. And if you're asking why aren't we talking about him as best actor and his nomination, I'm very glad he's on there. I think that he's been recognized enough that probably the voters aren't going to endorse this performance. And also, I mean, he does very well playing a sort of an odious person, Gangs of New York, There Will Be Blood. But this particular one, I think that honestly, I think there's a lot of Academy voters who are not going to engage with him as a magnificent tailor costume designer on the same level that they would as him as a guy drilling for oil in the Wild West. I think it's honestly a movie I wanted to see with all my girlfriends.
Does the fact that he's announced this is his last film change anything for an Oscar voter?
It could, except I don't believe it. Do you believe it, Sam?
Not at all. I mean, I can...
Maybe 5 years off.
Yeah, I mean, I keep remembering...
when he went to make shoes?
Yeah, and it's just sort of like you...
This time I think he's going to do a biodynamic farm in Maine. I'm really looking forward to that.
I love it.
And I am going to totally join his CSA.
Okay.
Yes.
I will. I may sound a little bit sarcastic and dismissive, but truthfully, I love him and his performances. So it's just sort of one of those things where it's like, I will watch this, but half of my time is already spent working at the theater. So to come in for like a 2.5 hour serious, like heavy PTA movie, I'm gonna save that for home when I can like have a coffee and get up and like pause
okay
the
after
film.
After the break you're gonna tell me what a PTA movie is, but
okay.
But we do
Paul
have to
Thomas
take
Thomas Anderson,
oh,
the director.
Okay. Before we take a quick break, a word about Monday's program. We're gonna talk with Maine's legislative leaders about what's happening in Augusta. If you have questions, you can email them over the weekend or post on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Lamy Wellahan Shoes, helping people in Maine communities through their shoe donation program, gathering and distributing gently worn shoes for Mainers in need. An evergreen home performance dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine energy audit and insulation rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
As immigration policy continues its sea change, one Massachusetts family is torn apart.
Taking them one by one, that's how I see it. First it was my dad, then my mom, my brother.
And two communities bridging the political divide, one relationship at a time.
It was putting ourselves out and asking them to put themselves out honestly about who they are, what they care about.
Coming up this week on Next from the New England News Collaborative.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is looking for a new CTO, a Chief Technology Officer, who would be based in our Bangor office. All things technical at Maine Public includes our information technology, infrastructure, and radio and television broadcast systems. Still listening? If this world resonates with you or anyone you might know, please visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Careers for information and application materials. And please let us know by March 18th. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Movies and the Oscars. With me today, Mary Poles with the Portland Press Herald and Sam Mercer with Nickelodeon Cinemas. Join our conversation. Our number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Katie. The movie that stuck with me the most was The Florida Project. That's two votes for The Florida Project from our audience today.
Yeah, it really was a movie that it's got the people who liked it have loved it. Like I've had people ask me like when before the nominations even came out, did I think that The Florida Project was going to get a nomination? Something I really am sad I missed when it was out.
I want to know if Katie has seen I, Tonya, because I was talking during the break about how I feel like both those movies speak to sort of like the lower white class demographic in a really interesting way, different. But, you know, I think they're a great pairing to make you think about how people are regarded in our society. I mean, particularly, so Margaret Robbie, who plays Tonya Harding in I, Tonya, is up for Best Actress. And it's a wonderful performance. My plug for that movie is that I went into it having watched every second of that actual drama playing out in real time and being very, very much, you know, on Nancy Kerrigan's side. And I came out thinking about the way we as a society punish the Tonya Hardings of the world. And so it was kind of revelatory for me. Another movie I saw at the Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sam.
I mean, we try to make it as enjoyable experience as possible.
Elaine on Facebook, Sam Rockwell as the racist, redneck, adversary to, accomplice of Frances McDormand was the knockout performance of the films I've seen. A character you could never put your finger on. As acting chops go, he was every bit Frances's match.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but what about Woody Harrelson?
it's the thing is that cast is really good.
Yeah.
That cast is really strong.
Yeah.
I mean, the problems that I have heard about Three Billboards from folks coming out has always been it tends to lose itself in the third act of the film. It is not writing-wise something they enjoyed. They didn't like the style of it. No one has once said the cast was bad.
You couldn't argue about that.
A lineup that is just impressively strong.
And Sam Rockwell is always great. I mean, I feel like you were talking about Gary Oldman before. I feel like Sam Rockwell is like a younger Gary Oldman in terms of his capability.
100%.
And an American one, obviously. But I do, when Woody Harrelson's character, he writes some great letters in that movie. And it's also just, it's a very sly performance that's incredibly touching. So even though I didn't love that movie, there's a scene involving Woody Harrelson that made me cry.
So I know we want to talk about some other movies that are not Oscar nominated. And I would like to bring one up from last year, I believe, just because of Woody Harrelson. This movie is not something that, like, if you like Oscar movies, you should go see. It's War of the Planet of the Apes, the latest Planet of the Apes movie. I only bring it up because Woody Harrelson is the bad guy in that film, and it is so clear that he either decided or was directed to just channel Marlon Brando from Apocalypse Now. It is Woody Harrelson doing Colonel Kurtz.
Okay.
And it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen in a movie in a while.
All right. Let's talk about something that people can see right now. What about Black Panther?
Thank you, Mary, for asking for me.
It's a little bit late. I mean, it's obviously it's not an Oscar nominee.
How's that doing at the Nickelodeon? From what I hear, it's killing it.
It's just we can't keep people out of the theater. I mean, it's just continually doing business.
I haven't seen it yet, but everyone I know who has seen it loves it and has seen it two or three times. Mm-hmm. And these are people who usually don't find time to go to movies.
Yeah,
it's really great. It's really invigorating. It's gorgeous to look at. It has all of these great actors, and it also, it's one of those, you know, a lot of times with these superhero movies, I'm like, I'm not that interested in the next chapter. Mm-hmm. This one, I am completely excited about. And it's Ryan Coogler, who I will just plug the movie Fruitvale Station, which he directed. I loved it so much. And Michael B. Jordan, who is well, can I say the bad guy? Is that too much of a spoiler? He's the ambiguous,
he's
like,
the
maybe
the antagonist.
Yes, he's the antagonist.
He is the antagonist in the film.
But he was in Fruitvale Station playing such a different kind of part. And he's great in this.
Yeah.
And is it Chadwick Bosworth he played Jackie Robinson?
Chadwick Boseman.
What?
Boseman.
Boseman, sorry.
Okay, we're going to go to Carol, who's calling from Shapley, if my clicker will work here. There we go. Carol and Shapley, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm a fan of Three Billboards. And the reason being is that I am a bereaved mother. I lost my daughter 10 years ago, tragically. So I'm emotionally invested, and it is hard to be objective. But I would like to say that there are several things that were touched on in the movie that I found very real. And one of them was the far-reaching effects of grief, stemming from the beginning with the mother to the sibling out into the community. And I thought that the movie touched on so many important issues, not unrelated, but tied it into the grief. And one of the most important things is that it was left open-ended, that there is no resolution or closure, as is the popular term, to a grief. And I am such a fan of Frances McDormand anyway, and that's my opinion. I was disappointed to not hear any of you talk about what the movie actually was about, and it was about a mother's grief and how she was driven, and I very much related to that character.
Carol, thanks so much.
From her wearing a uniform and not being able to dress, not being able to do anything. And even I lived vicariously through her violence and very many people are afraid of that kind of a grief, but that is what grief can do.
Carol, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your perspective, and I'm so sorry for you.
Yeah, that's very real.
And who do you want, you know, honestly, who do I want representing my grief in Hollywood? It would be Frances McDormand. I absolutely understand what you're saying.
Again, and it's sort of like that's a very specific kind of grief that someone who doesn't have children can't know. So it is always going to be a little bit out of arm's reach for me. And so I think that, thank you for reminding us that that is something that is so important for movies to touch on and to show, because it's very easy to you know, forget about all of the different perspectives that are out there.
And just sit back and want to be entertained. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, for me, though, I will say that I understand, like, the beginning of the movie is it's based on the idea of grief. But I feel like the director's point was to play up the rage aspect of grief. And, you know, I would never tell you that, like, that's not what you should be enjoying watching or needing to see or anything like that. But for me, it felt like a little bit one note in that portrayal, that it was all about the rage.
So thank you so much, Carol. I want to ask you all what you're looking forward to. What's Sam, you know what's coming out. What's coming out that you can't wait to see?
A Wrinkle in Time.
That's one of them.
Okay, so this,
for sure.
Many of us read A Wrinkle in Time as children. Loved it, one of your favorite books ever. This isn't going to be the Wrinkle in Time you may expect, is it?
No, it's like a biracial Wrinkle in Time. I think it's awesome. I can't. When I saw that trailer, I really love Ava DuVernay. I think she's a wonderful director. But when I saw the trailer for the first time, I was just so blown away. And you know what it made me think is, here we are. We're celebrating Black Panther, justifiably so. But it's on some level, it's shocking that it took to the 21st century for there to be a superhero movie where there are like two white characters and everybody else is African American.
Yeah.
And so with A Wrinkle in Time, you know, why does Claudia, why would she have to be white? Isn't it fantastic that she's going to be, that she's biracial? I can't wait to see it. And it also just looks like a crazy, beautiful movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely curious about A Wrinkle in Time.
I bet you didn't read it, Sam.
Well, that's an assumption to make.
I'm just saying it based on the fact that I have pushed. So Jennifer read it. I read it. But I pushed that book on my son so hard, and I just got nowhere.
Mary, are you saying we might be older than Sam, or we're just a different gender?
I'm saying we're older and a different gender, but, you know.
I'm saying that I liked A Wrinkle in Time.
Did you read it? Yes, that's awesome.
I read a lot.
So, Sam, we're almost out of time. We have about a minute and a half left. Tell me what you're looking forward to. What's coming to the Nickelodeon just know people are going to be so excited to see?
What's coming up very shortly is a movie called The Death of Stalin. Which I saw that face. Right? It actually looks hysterical. It's a comedy take on everything, and it does not look historically accurate at all. It looks very funny, and it looks very weird and irreverent, and it's got Jeffrey Tambor in it.
Ooh.
So I'm curious about it. I think that and the the Justice League,
Captain America?
Yeah, the new Infinity War, the Avengers Infinity War.
Okay. I'm sure I'll be seeing that.
All of my comic book fans who ever hear this are going to murder me for saying Justice League. But it is in fact the Avengers Infinity War looks.
And Mary, you're sure you'll be seeing this because you're a 13-year-old son.
The one who doesn't read Wrinkle in Time, unlike Sam, who is obviously.
Just read everything.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. You guys are terrific guests. Thank you so much for coming in on this wild day in which we have a little flood going on outside our studio. Sam Mercer, the general manager for Nickelodeon Cinemas in Portland. Mary Poles, features writer for the Portland Press Herald and former film critic for Time Magazine. Sam Harris ran the board today. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Quick note about next week, Maine Calling will be live from the Mount Washington Observatory Weather Discovery Center on Tuesday. We'd love to have you join the audience in North Conway and watch the program live. You can learn more about that at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.